Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 190. Tonight's episode is brought to you by hot pepper oil for the man flu. That's right. There is sickness going around Salida, and now that I work in person, I fucking got it. So if you hear any weirdness or I sound funny, it's because I have the man flu. And I'll probably cough, and I'll probably hack up a lung like an old dude, and that'll be what you hear. Yeah. I don't think I've gone on a bike ride since we talked last, so I don't really have anything to talk about, so let's just keep it moving.
Is that it? You're not going to pull something out of your ass like you always do?
I got a load of goat hay, or goat straw, and goat poop today from Tom, and I had to stop numerous times while raking very light material into a small truck, or pitchforking small material into a large light material into a small truck, because I have no stamina right now. I'm like Daisy. I'm just not very tough. So
Daisy being our she like 15 pound, 17 pound?
Yeah, she's sub 20 pound
Jack Russell Terrier who will wrestle her face off with the big dog, but then she just like stops and pants and lays down.
Mm-hmm.
She's like totally flapped out on a blanket right now. She's so tired. It's like 90, I don't know, I'd say like 95% of the time when we eat dinner, that's when the dogs, like that's like dog WWE on our couch in the living room. They just that's when they go at it as hard as they possibly can, just play fighting. And it's pretty funny to watch because the little dog is so much faster than the big dog. And he's like mostly border collie, so he's pretty quick.
Yeah, he's no golden
nerd. Yeah, he's not like
he's a golden retriever
or something where he's like kind of goofy and a little clumsy. Like he can stick and move, but man, she's like on another level. She goes after him like a rat. But is that all you got?
Yeah, I'm done.
You know Matt's not feeling good when he stops talking early. All right, well, Kenny, what you been up to?
I rode moto, rode the Husky, did a long dual sport ride, another like 100 miler, went with a couple other people. One person who hasn't really done a whole lot of dual sporting. And yeah, everybody had a good time, explored some new stuff. And yeah, resounding success. Nobody ate shit. Couple people's motorcycles fell apart, but not mine, and not from crashing.
Like
fell apart. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, like parts falling off them. Yeah, someone's exhaust fell off. Some plastics fell off. Had to go find some stuff that was dropped many miles prior, and then didn't realize till stopping. So yeah.
Neat.
Yep. What else? I think that's really it for me, though.
All right. Well, my week has been similarly uneventful. Done a little hiking. I've done what I can garden-wise. My seeds are all starting to sprout up. I had a squash plant in a soil block, in a small one, and that was a bad idea because it started to sprout and it just incredible hulked its way out of the whole fucking block and just blew it apart. But I put it in a pot in some fresh soil, and hopefully it's still sprouting, so still going. We'll see how it goes. So that's your plant update. Chickens are all about the same. That's your chicken nugget. Same with them. We'll be getting our meat birds around the end of May. And I had a doctor's appointment today for an EMG, and if you've never had one of those, it's a lot like touching parts of your body to an electric fence repeatedly. So that's a lot of fun. Well, first they do the electric fence thing, and then it's like they have like a medical grade mini taser that they shock your muscles with, and then they stick a needle in the muscles, and they listen to your muscle contractions, which is really cool.
None of this is real. There's just some guy that's like, I like shocking.
I told him, I was like, this is like back alley acupuncture.
Sure, but what's the end game?
What they're testing for is to see how the nerve in question conducts signals from one part of your body to another. And I don't know exactly where the needle listening thing, like, they're, he's listening, and it made sense. Like, I asked him what he was listening for, because he would kind of, and it's a tiny, it's like a needle the size of a hair, right? It's not like they're sticking a fucking syringe needle in you and moving it around. They stick a really tiny needle in the muscle. And he said he was listening for the electrical signal. Hold on, Matt's coughing. Okay. They're listening for he's listening for the electrical, I guess, the needle picks up the electricity that your muscles release when they contract, and the machine, I guess, converts it to sound. That's like the best thing I could understand about it. I mean, I understand the basic physiology of muscle contraction, and just because I understand that, I could, like, when he just said what he was doing or what he was listening to, I understood, you know, somewhat what it meant. But basically, he stuck needles all in my hand, in my arm, and in my neck. And he said, I'm going to have to go through all of this with, like, a fine-tooth comb and, you know, look for some patterns. But you definitely, he's like, I'll call you with, you know, really, like, once I go through it, I'll call you on Monday and, you know, tell you what I think. But you definitely have something going on in your wrist, and you should get a, just because it's inexpensive, and even if it, you know, even if I'm wrong about that, you know, a wrist brace is like $15, you're out $15. Yeah, he's like, wear that as much as you can, especially at night. He's like, you know, even if it bothers you at first, you know, try to get used to it, wear it at night, because you might have carpal tunnel. And I was very surprised by that, because my experience knowing people with carpal tunnel, it's always people that, like, sit at a computer and type, or have some kind of a repetitive, like, small, I don't know, like, muscle group, you know, hand intense job. And, you know, it's like not one of those things that I would ever even consider having. And, you know, I don't know if I've, like, I don't know, talked about it before, but so what the doctors have told me is that if your nerve is being pushed on in one spot, like, say, a bone spur in your neck, you may or may not ever have problems with it. And, or it might just be minor problems that you have, minor pain. If your nerve gets pushed on in two spots, like, say, your neck and your wrist, then the nerve is just like, fuck you, everything is going to hurt. It's like exponentially worse if the nerve is being touched in more than one place. So that's where it is now. So, you know, we're recording Thursday. The doctor's going to call me Monday, and hopefully I will have some better answers by Wednesday when we, or Thursday, whenever we record again. But that's where we are now. And I looked up contributing factors to carpal tunnel, and one of them is being female, one of them is being over 40, and another one is hypothyroidism, which I've got all three of those. So we'll see what happens. But I think that is everything for me. Oh, and if any of our listeners have personal experience with fungus gnats, I would love to hear how you've gotten rid of them. Because I've looked at the internet, and everything I've read says use something called BT thergicide in your plants when you water them, which I've been doing that. Try to keep areas of your house that are normally moist dry, like we've been drying the shower out after we use it. Put up sticky traps. And I've caught a lot of fungus gnats on the sticky traps. I've got them fucking everywhere. They're all over the fucking place in our house. And caught lots of them. But nevertheless, they persist. So, if anyone has tried anything else besides the common, I guess, organic pesticide and sticky traps that has killed your fungus gnats, please email me, Andrea@justwritingalongshow.com. So that's it. We can go to some new shit. You guys want to do that?
Yeah.
Who's going to go first?
No, wait. We didn't let Kenny go.
No, Kenny did some moto stuff.
Oh, that's right.
Went for a long ride.
Yeah, I'm
yeah, fucking, you're on it.
Oh, fuck. My mom just texted me that she broke her hip. Damn.
Well, moving forward, like a Mo Kuvin.
Tonight's show is just a banger, isn't it? Matt's sick.
Amo Kuvinin. That's what we're gonna move forward like.
I'm gonna call my mom real quick, and you guys just talk about new shit, and I'll be back.
You should do that. Well, do you want to start with the truckload of stolen bikes in the room, Kenny?
yeah, sure, I guess.
RE Bicycles had a literal truckload of bikes stolen, and I know this seems weird to the bike industry, but it's really not that weird. The number of containers that get trucked around all the time for something like this to happen. Do you disagree?
Yeah, immediately the first thing I thought of was the scene from the first Fast and the Furious. I think it was the first one.
Where they're like stealing VCRs off of a moving truck.
Yeah. Just all the dialogue is just so funny. The MO is the same. It was three Honda Civics with green underglow. Precision driving. Just hilarious. There's a lot of interesting stuff to come with this. If you're bored, maybe we can find a link and post it. I found it buried in one of the comment sections somewhere. But there was, I think, the fella who runs Bike Index, which is like an index for stolen bikes that is a database that's, you know, shared. And I think you can even have tie-in. You can even, yeah, it's public facing. You can have tie-ins, I think, to your point of sale and all kinds of stuff. But anyway, that guy was tracking down basically a organized crime syndicate of people stealing bikes, mostly from California, I think at the time, and trafficking them to Mexico and them being sold on like a geofenced place, you know, whether it was Facebook or something like that in Mexico where you couldn't readily find it if you were in the US. But anyway, pretty crazy how the transport of all that stuff works. Apparently a couple of bikes have already shown up because there were some limited edition dirt jumpers. And I think some of those already showed up in California.
Unreleased.
Ah, there you go.
So it was like their dirt jump bike. If you own one of those, it's stolen.
Yeah.
Like, it's not necessarily limited. Like, you have to know it's this paint. Like, this is the only RE dump. Like, RE dirt jump bike equals stolen.
Sure. But it's pretty weird that would people would have the balls to sell that stuff in California. That's really weird. And I don't know if they were directly selling it. I think they were asking for help with assembly or something along those lines. But anyway, a lot of interesting implications here on the, you know, insurance piece of it and insurance going up and people speculating, is it an inside job and blah, blah, blah. But I think the likelihood of it being an inside job is extremely low, especially the volume of bikes that they actually move. Like 300 bikes for a company like that is, you know, I don't know. A partial month's worth of bikes is not like that big a deal.
Yeah, warehouse fire is more like inside job. You know, oops, the cardboard caught on fire.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, interesting stuff. But if you're bored, maybe go try to track down that Bike Index article. I'm sure if you just search for Bike Index Mexico crime ring, you'll find it. You know, in fact, let me do just that. Bike Index Mexico crime ring. Yeah, here we go. It's a Wired article, and it's the first thing that popped up for me on the old Google when I just Googled that. But it's a pretty long article, interesting read for sure. And yeah, it raises lots of questions. And there's some fairly organized crime. It's not just like a smash and grab situation, which of course, when an entire semi truck is stolen, it kind of makes you think that it's organized crime, but who knows? Maybe it's not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in some ways, like thinking about this from a crime perspective, there's a lot of things that would be, I understand this stuff is a very valuable truckload, but I can also think of a truckload of things that would be a lot easier to sell if it were stolen.
Yeah, right. These are very unique things. They're all serialized, and not that they wouldn't, you know, get rid of serial numbers however they can, but I don't think there's a whole lot of people that are dumb enough to buy an unserialized, relatively expensive bike. And all the news around it, you know, when a buddy of a buddy is like, hey, I found this RE for really cheap, people are probably going to start asking questions. So yeah, it does beg the question, like, why do it? In the same way, like, why would you ever – there are people that, like, smash and grab stuff from, like, Apple stores. And a bunch of Macs and iPhones are completely and totally worthless when you steal them. Like, they just lock them down, and they're literally worthless. Nobody can ever use them. So I just don't understand why you would do that. But I guess that's why they're in that particular facet of crime, because they are dumb.
Yeah, but if you think about it, the first thing that came to mind is something as stupid as like an Ace Hardware truck. You know, it's going to have like concrete and screws and like, I mean, that stuff would be really easy to sell, right? Everybody needs that.
Sure, yeah. I think there are, this is not supposed to be a tutorial on what's the best semi-truck to steal, but yeah. There's plenty of other better stuff to steal than serialized bikes. Very weird. Maybe it was just a random ass thing. No clue. I'm sure we'll probably find more details as time goes on, you would think. But yeah, anyway, that's crazy news. And hopefully we don't love direct-to-consumer brands, generally speaking, around here. And Ari is in my backyard. But, you know, I want to be cordial. I've called them a few times, and they've been helpful about some random things. And I don't want anyone.
Well, it's one thing to love their bikes. It's another to wish bad upon their business.
Yeah, I definitely don't wish bad upon them for sure. And that's unfortunate. So hopefully they can be made whole again, whatever that means.
You know, something that I just thought of, because you were talking about direct to consumer. And then I was like, man, I bet Kenny has to try to source a lot of RE derailleur hangers for people. And then I realized UDH is making that less of a thing, because a bike came in the shop this week and it was having brake issues. And I'm like, yo, dude, this hanger's bent. And he's like, yep. And I'm like, can you find one? It was an Azonic dirt jump frame. And he's like, nope. And I was like, cool. And I wrote a note in the work order, do not touch the hanger. If we bend it and break it, this bike is trash. And yeah. The rise of UDH, I think, honestly, will make the... This isn't quite right to repair, because that's a whole different thing. But 10 years from now, when some kook-ass thing rolls into your shop... And I'm not saying Ari is kook, but, you know, you can still find hangers for, like, every quick-release Trek and Specialized ever made from the last 20 years. Like, they've just used the same ones forever. And... with UDH, you know, something is UDH, you just put a fucking hanger in there and off you go. And it's not going to be a big deal, you know, assuming we're talking about a hardtail, threaded bottom bracket, zero stack headset. That's going to be pretty ubiquitous and easy to support for at least a decade or two to come, in my opinion. And with that, I do have something I want to talk about, which is, in my opinion, Santa Cruz makes the best UDH hanger available.
So they don't use a SRAM branded one?
Nope, they make their own, and it's all metal construction, and it seems to be tolerant to slight tweaking better than the SRAM one.
Yeah, the SRAM one doesn't like to be bent. It's like pretty darn rigid from what I've seen. I think maybe I've only ever seen one broken one, but they pretty much don't bend. And also, I guess they're designed to spin backwards if they take a hit, and that's why they got that plastic in there. Isn't that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, these still rotate.
Got it.
That's part of the torque spec, you know, is like it's kind of tightening up and bottoming out kind of all together. And then when it hits, you know, you would loosen it, put it back where it goes, retorque it. Bob's your uncle. So moving on to the next thing that I just want to shit on really quickly. We've got real big thalidomide vibes here. That's a deep cut that no one's going to understand. They're a company that produced information to the FDA that was like, our sleeping pills are safe for pregnant women. And the FDA was like, nah, this seems like bullshit. Your evidence sucks. And as they drew out long time trying to get more studies and stuff, turns out babies in other parts of the world were coming out with, like, you know, no arms, like hands from the shoulders and no lungs and born without bowels and all kinds of bad shit. So where I'm going is, never trust the seller.
I came back to this conversation on a really weird note.
Never trust the seller of the source. Pink bike video. Does wrapping your bike actually make a difference? This video was made in partnership with Ride Rap. Guess what? Of course it makes a difference. Because Ride Rap has a vested interest in selling you a wrap.
No shit.
I don't think the shit's bad. I just don't know that it's for me.
Yeah, I have an opinion for sure.
Well, let me finish real quick, which is I wrapped my stump jumper. Actually, I didn't. Someone else did because I can't wrap my head around that shit. No puns intended. And I brought this up numerous times at the shop. I wrapped a fucking bread truck with like a 60 inch by 20.
Well, yeah, but if you get a dime sized bubble in a bread truck, it's not a problem.
Right. But the Ride Rap and me just don't jive. And I took that bike to Sedona. And now everywhere that I have a little nick or a little heel rub that kind of lifted the edge, there's red dirt under clear wrap on white paint, and I'm just not a fan.
That's my biggest gripe with it, is it's like a couch cover. You get this nice couch, and like I'm going to fucking sit on it and do some like
fuck your couch
and do some reasonable maintenance to like make your couch not fucking nasty. Like maybe, you know, don't eat ice cream with your hands over your new couch or something. But do you want to go into someone's house who has a fucking like crinkly plastic couch cover on it like a 100-year-old person would have? It's ridiculous that I hate that. So it's same thing with bikes. You got this really nice bike and then you ride it for a year and now it has Ride Wrap and every little edge, just like Matt says, is coming up just enough and it's becoming like discolored and it also is going to have nicks in it because hopefully it's doing its job a little bit and it's tearing up the softish, rubbery plastic stuff versus your paint. So your bike looks like garbage. And I guess you could argue that when you're done, could you like remove all that stuff and like spend a bunch of time cleaning it all up? Yeah, I guess so. But at the end of the day, you end up paying $100 or $200 for like the actual product, or maybe it's only $100. And then you're going to get someone to wrap it for you. And unless they're an insane person, they're going to charge you $300. And then in a year, you have a bike that looks like garbage. And then it's only good when you sell it. I don't know. I'm just not for it at all. I think it's ridiculous. I don't know why it's so popular.
There is one place that I think Ride Wrap would be amazing. And it is the 100% like one or 180 degree polar opposite from their intended use case. Step through frames. If you did the top of your step through bike, it would keep it looking really good and you could replace it once a year and it would be great because we sell those specialized globe hauls and they get like sneaker marks and little scuffs from where someone picks their foot up to like throw their foot through the step through and kicks it. And it would be that is not what Ride Wrap is meant for.
I have another one that's totally not a use case. Road bikes, more likely to carry them on the roof of your vehicle and more likely to be hit by lots of little pebbles and things on the road, like on the down tube and like the bottom of the chainstays. Road bikes get all chewed up in those areas. You could put ride, just like Matt was saying, like one strip on the down tube and then maybe a couple on the chainstays and you're done. Change that out once a year. That'd be good. That'd be useful.
And I will say, previously, I was semi-defending Pink Bike about certain things, but this is pretty egregious in my book. It's a whole video made with them.
it's advertorial.
It is bad. It's bad. I don't like the look or feel of it at all. I think it is about as shill as it gets, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, in other news, Canyon announces a new aluminum Spectral, 140 rear, 150 front. Mixed wheel compatible. They gave us the weight in kilograms. So the Spectral 6 weighs over 33 pounds.
I mean, it's an aluminum trail bike, so
it's just really...
That's what aluminum bikes weigh. I know you and Kenny are all like, yeah, aluminum bikes are awesome, and they're just a little heavier. And it's like, well, yeah, but you take a bike that by nature is a little heavier, and then you make it a little heavier, it's going to be two times the little heavier.
No, but it's the problem of, and this is a segue into something I want to talk about, which is, Kenny, do you agree that I think we've talked about this before, but I don't know, me and Manflu, we're just going on one now. what is your opinion on model creep right now? Like travel creep across kind of all models everywhere.
Are you mean like a particular model, call it a top fuel, and then all of a sudden a top fuel is 150 travel? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, like the new top fuel is closer to the old Fuel EX than anything else. Like, why is this happening?
Well, I mean, I guess you got to figure, I'll try to defend it for a minute. Imagine you have a name that is
very...
Hold on
1 second. All right, I'm back.
Imagine you have a name that's very recognizable. We'll call it Top Fuel. And it is supposed to be the raciest full suspension bike that they make. If they decide that their raciest bike is going to be 120, then the Top Fuel is their raciest bike. And if all their cross-country people race the Top Fuel, then okay, I guess you can still call it a Top Fuel. I think that's reasonable.
But like the Stump Jumper is the old Stump Jumper Evo, and we don't have... Okay, let me ask this. Do you think there needs to be something between the Epic Evo and the Stump Jumper?
Probably, but that's a tough one. I feel like I owned one of those. I owned a Stump Jumper ST, and arguably, I think it was a good bike. But who's it? Could it be on one hand good for everybody? I think so. But is any even remote racer type person ever going to have one? Yeah, probably not. And anybody who is more recreational, they unfortunately are skewed by specs, and they're going to say like, well, do I want 150 mil in the back or 130 in the back? Like, well, yeah, of course I want 150, because that's just how they think. The average person who just says, I want a trail bike and I want to do cool things, even if they're not like a, they're probably not a hardcore rider, let's say, they're not going to buy the bike that is maybe better for them, which is that mid travel, you know, either long down country or short travel trail bike. I think that's why that segment is not very popular now, because it's not popular. I think that's why manufacturers are not making a whole lot of like 130 and 140 bikes. There's definitely some out there, but I feel like they're not that popular anymore. And I think it's because it was just sales. Sales said they didn't sell. That's my vibe.
That's fine.
I don't disagree.
I mean, I'm not.
I don't think that they shouldn't exist. I think that unfortunately, consumers aren't interested in that segment today for whatever reason.
All
right. It's like, I think most people that buy a full size pickup truck probably don't need a full size pickup truck.
I mean, they're not really doing truck shit for the most part.
Probably not doing truck shit.
And you know this because they keep making the beds on pickup trucks smaller and smaller and smaller, and no one but us bitches about it. Or people that do truck shit.
Yeah. But, I mean, I will say the flip side of that, right? I didn't understand it at first, but I've ridden around and I've driven and been passenger and loaded up and unloaded and et cetera. For example, a new F-150. And I will say you get one with the Giganto cab, which is like the one everybody gets. It's basically an SUV inside, and it's actually pretty practical. But of course, then you lose kind of the whole point of a pickup truck-ish. You can still put stuff in the bed, but there's a reason why it's become popular. Even though I think if people were real with themselves, you could do the same thing with a smaller car, spend less money, save more gas, etc. But again, people given that option of like, ugh, it's this like FOMO, this fear of missing out on, oh, it's a little bit bigger, or oh, it's a little bit more powerful, or oh, we can tow 1,000 more pounds. And they go buy that bigger, more expensive thing because they just do. I think that's why the short travel trail bike thing is just not as popular anymore, because people think, well, I'm already spending all this money. I should just get the extra plus 10 or plus 20 mil travel. And then they do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kenny just broke me. So.
And by the way, everyone, my mom is all right. She slipped and fell in the backyard while she was repotting a plant.
So is it like, do you know, is it surgery required, or
she said that
she just chill?
So, nope, she's going to have surgery tomorrow. She went to the, they had to call the ambulance because she couldn't get, well, she was alone. She had her phone in her pocket, luckily. Which I say luckily because she never has her phone with her, but she just happened to have it with her. And she was able to call my dad. My dad came home from wherever he was and
You know your dad was at the barbecue restaurant.
He was probably at McDonald's having coffee, knowing him. I think he has like a group of friends that he meets there for coffee certain times of the day.
The old man coffee meet.
Old man coffee hour. But yeah, so she called him. He came home. He couldn't help her up, so they had to call the ambulance. And she went in and had x-rays. I asked her what part of her hip broke, and she did not know. She just said that the doctor said her hip was broken. She had the other one replaced last year. So, she, unfortunately, she fell on the side that's not made out of metal. And she, she broke it. She's going to have surgery tomorrow. But she's done. She knows, like, her way around. She knows the physical therapy people because she's already had a knee replacement and a hip replacement. So, yeah, I told her to call me before surgery tomorrow, and I'm sure my dad will keep me in the loop. She should be okay. She's pretty healthy otherwise.
Yeah, that stinks. Hopefully it goes as well as it can.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I hope she gets more active. I mean, I know our listeners are all active people, but just to reiterate, when you stop moving, you start just being more prone to those things because your body basically works like a giant upside down pendulum, and all the little muscles in your lower legs, your ankles, your feet, those are what keep you balanced. And so the less you move around, the weaker they get, and the less they are able to balance you if you start to lose your balance, and you are more likely to fall down. So, you know, especially our older listeners, more seasoned listeners.
Those riding with maturity and self-preservation in mind.
You know, it's great that you ride mountain bikes, but man, start doing some strength. The older, yeah, it's cool to lift weights when you're like 20 and you want big muscles. As you get older, you need to lift weights or do some sort of resistance training in order to survive. So just keep that in mind as you get older.
Yeah, but go out and look at the bike in your garage. Does it have quick releases? If so, then you might need to
you might need to start strength training.
You might need to do some training so you don't
looks.
Break your hip.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ. Wow, Kenny. If your bike has quick releases, I think that should be the show title.
Oh man. Can All I right. do the one new shit that is pretty insignificant, but I think it's kind of cool.
I actually love this thing, and if you're out there, and I know they're listening because everyone listens, I want to try one of these.
The Rota Luber 3D prints their way back, or sorry, I screwed that up. The Rota Luber 3D prints their way to better chain lubrication, and they have a new e-bike back pedal tool. And I think both of these things are cool. This is basically just a little plastic bottle that's the size of a lube bottle that you put your own lube into. And they've 3D printed this little mechanism that makes it to where when you put it on your chain, the bottle is upside down and it drips your chain lube onto this little roller that just basically, I guess, targets the inner rollers of your chain.
Well, the roller is toothed and the outlet aligns with the roller on your chain.
Yeah, so it drips the chain lube into the rollers of your chain without getting it all over the rest of the chain.
The only thing I think it needs is it needs to have a digital readout, and you need to be able to set how many chain lengths you have, and it, you know, counts how many revolutions there are. And when you exceed that number of revolutions, it shocks you, and then you drop the tool.
They do show, like, I actually watched the little one-minute video. They show you, they say, before you start, locate your master link, and then backpedal your chain, and see how many revolutions it takes you to get back to your master link. And that is how many revolutions you should squeeze the bottle for when you're lubing your chain with this. And then it says stop squeezing and rotate at least one more time to make sure that the lube gets into the rollers, and then you're done. And for me, it would save me chain lube because I literally put the lube over my chain and just backpedal. And I used extra lube. I will admit that. I used more lube than I could if I just used like a needle applicator and dripped it into each roller one at a time. Matt's giggling because I'm saying lube. Are you done? I'm just going to wait till you're done.
Sorry, there's an Apache helicopter over my house right now.
I heard that.
That was kind of wild. But yeah, I use too much. But when I'm finished applying too much chain lube, I wipe as much of it off as I can because it only needs to be in those rollers. And my rag is not wiping the rollers out. It's wiping the outside of the chain off. So, yeah, you could do like I do. You could use a little needle applicator on your chain lube and drip it into each individual roller, which takes fucking forever, and I don't have the patience for that. And or you could do like what a lot of people do and either don't lube your chain or you just put lube on like I do and just ride without wiping it off and then do that every time you ride. And you end up, you can't locate your master link because you can't fucking see it in your chain. And you think I'm joking. You would think I'm joking. Matt had to cough again. But I'm not. There are a lot of people riding around there and that you can't tell which links are the inner links and which links are the outer links. Because there's just a shellac or a layer of grease and dirt and everything just filling their entire chain. Matt walked off to get something out of his bag.
It's really important.
So I think these would be really cool to sell to that customer who is a chronic overluber.
Also, if you have quick releases, you need to buy this tool. I want you to look at this.
Is this what you were going to tell me on air as a surprise?
I already forgot what that was.
I don't know. You had some kind of conspiracy theory. Oh, yeah. That's what all wax chains look like after they're waxed. Yeah, you can make shapes out of it, and they... Hold on. That's so, going to be... I'm actually going to post on Instagram, on the JRE Instagram, that I haven't done in, like, a month at least.
I had a customer come in, and he brings me a perfectly clean Cervelo Aspero. It was an Aspero 5, like the fancy one. And it's got red 12...
Is that a road bike or a gravel bike?
Gravel bike.
Okay.
And it's got red 12-speed... And he asked me to install his brand new custom pre-waxed secret blend from Silka. Pre-waxed SRAM Red 12 or flat top 12 speed chain. How much does this cost? Oh, the Roto Luber only costs $40. I might buy one.
Oh, and I didn't. Hold on. They also make an e-bike back pedal tool. If you need to put chain lube on your chain with a Roto Luber, you need to backpedal. If you have an e-bike, you can't do that very easily. You have to, like, use one hand to turn the rear wheel.
So I have an idea here. What if
all right,
you pedaled fucking forwards?
You could do that, too.
Okay.
But
also,
this is a... Look,
no, hold
this
on.
This is a $17 3D printed tool. You jam it into one of the chain rings of your e-bike.
Chainring bolts.
Yeah, one of the chainring bolts, sorry. And when you start to pedal the crank backwards, it will, you know, spin freely, but then it touches this little 3D printed thing and it turns the whole drivetrain.
Oh, so it's like a stick.
It's a stick, yeah.
Okay,
it's a... You could
stick.
Do the same thing with like a long tool.
Go in your yard and find a stick.
Also, I will be... So the pre-wax chain is... Let's see, is this the one? This chain's $150, which is like $80 more than a red chain. I don't know. I never sell SRAM red chains. How much
are
those?
Yeah, I don't know. They've gotten really expensive. I know this is not SRAM red. The new red is...
They're $90.
Pretty pricey. And I know that I think $150 for the XXSL transmission chain.
Mm-hmm.
They're really pricey.
Oh, let's see how much it costs to buy a Silka Pre-Wax XXSL transmission chain.
There we go.
Oh, weird. They're charging the same price for those two. Anyways, that's just a lot of money.
Hold on. I'm taking a picture. You keep talking.
And the guy has me put his chain on, and he has made his bike. I mean, this thing has obviously been ridden, but it is like new clean. And I'm so sad. And I put it on and immediately... like pedal the chain around, and I'm like using a screwdriver, and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, your chain has so much extra wax on it. It doesn't. And I showed him his derailleur. I was like, the derailleur and the cog next to the one that the chain is on is eating this huge wax booger stuff off this chain. And he's like, huh? Oh,
man.
Well, just do that another time.
All right.
But
I made a chain boner.
I'm just not very impressed with wax. And yeah.
I am in agreeance.
Yeah, I was able to take that, whatever, 10 links of chain, maybe 8.
Something like that.
Bend it at a right angle.
Make an L shape.
And I made an L shape out of it with 2 links and was able to set it up and make it the rest of the links stick straight up in the air. But yeah, let's go ahead. We don't need the wax police coming after us. We can move on to something else.
Whoop, whoop. It's the sound of wax police. Trick Stuff made titanium additive printed brake levers for their $1,200 brake set.
I saw the levers and I'm like, man, you can get titanium 3D printed levers for your brakes. And I thought that it was just a company making aftermarket levers that looked really cool, but it's not.
Mm-mm.
Is Trick Stuff the one that uses water?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Mineral.
Ah.
I know the old Maguras. The rim brake Maguras, people would run water in them for their trials bikes.
Yeah, I thought there was like a German niche brake brand, Brake Force One maybe, and they ran on water for a minute.
What happens when it gets cold?
It freezes and your brakes explode.
I mean, that's just like you can put distilled water in your radiator.
Oh yeah,
of your car, and it works.
Brake Force One H2O brakes.
Yeah, like it works just fine as a coolant for your vehicle until it's too cool, and then it freezes and cracks things.
Oh, yeah, and they had clear lines. But this came out in 2013, so, God, Kenny, how was that still in the old noggin? This shit looks like straight-up fish tank hose.
The amount of shit and specs that I have in my brain. I think as of probably around 6 months ago, I actually reached my mental limit on what I can store, and I can't. You now just, shit just gets overwritten.
Yeah. I'm at the same place. Like, I had to remember how many links to add installing a hardtail chain, and I had to literally go to the SRAM tech document and remind myself with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never added links to a chain before, so I don't know.
Like, when you install a chain, you take, like, the long chain out of the box, and then you have to cut it.
Well, yeah.
She's talking about the overlap plus.
Oh, yeah. I've worked on, I mean, this is going to make people really angry, but I've worked on bikes a really, really long time. I've never cut a chain to an incorrect length, and I've never used that method.
I use it when I'm in between. Like, I normally will run it through the derailleur, go over the smallest gear and over the chainring, if it's a double on the small chainring, and remove links until there's tension on the chain. But if I'm in doubt, I'll use like the whatever big add link method.
Sure. And I guess technically they got to put something in there for, you can't just tell someone, hey, cut it the right length and don't be a dumbass. Like that doesn't work in instructions, unfortunately.
I mean, I've used my method and made a chain like a link too long before on my own personal bike.
I cut a chain too short at least twice in my life.
Yeah. It happens.
Oh, at least 3 times. I just remembered 1 time.
All right.
But anyway, I've officially gotten to the point where I have way too many damn numbers in my head. Just today, I forgot the difference between a 31.8 and a 31.6 seat post. Because I'm like, 31.8? Like, yeah, that's a size. That's right. But that's a fucking bar size. And that's when I know that I have officially reached the maximum. The amount of shit in my head that's bike related is out of control.
You should probably do some strength training, Kenny.
Should I like think harder?
Yeah,
that was an age joke.
Yeah.
No. For what it's worth, talking about old bike stuff, this last week or so, I had a customer come in, and I knew how to overhaul their Mavic Free Hub on a road bike without looking up any instructions because I just used to do it so often, and I did it. And I did everything, and the bushing was worn out, and I told him it was just going to be somewhat okay, and I got it put back together, and it was better, and goddamn Mavic rim was cracked. So then he bought a new wheel.
Mavic rim?
Did I not say Mavic?
You said Maverick.
No, Mavic.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with that said, yeah, I do have something really cool I want to talk about. It's a road bike, though, but Factor made essentially an every like day race bike. They took their super racy bike and they made the stack higher and the reach a little bit shorter, and they made it hold bigger tires, and they're selling it as the aero bike for most people. And I think that's really smart, and I really like it.
I've got a little
tidbit.
Still
a road bike.
I was trying to, on a new Levo Gen 4, I was trying to get some more slack for the controller wire that comes out of the front head tube. And one of my employees is like, oh, yeah, Specialized has this cool 3D model that shows you all the torque specs and all the cable routing in this little thing you can spin around. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'll take a look at it. And we pulled it up, and indeed, it looks really cool, except it's not accurate fucking at all. None of the lines go where they say they go. So it was completely useless. So there's that.
Well, I haven't gotten to ride our Gen 4 Levo yet because it came with broken non-specialized parts. So
nice. What I recommend you do, Matt, if you're bored, is go pull up that 3D model and look at it and be like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I want you to take your TCU out of your new bike and I want you to pull it back a little bit and tell me what you see in there, because it ain't what they show.
I had to replace the rear brake on one of the shop e-bike rentals, and apparently the TRP brake thing.
That was...
Was that just a floor bike?
Oh, that Vado. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the TRP calipers, I guess the seals are made out of Swiss cheese or something, I don't know, and the oil comes out, and they sent one that had like cheddar cheese instead of Swiss cheese, so I had to put that on. But I needed like literally a centimeter more slack in the hose because I had to trim the old fitting off.
And let me tell you what I saw of this. I'm like, hey, can you put this warranty brake on? And then I like talked to a customer.
Why'd you trim the hose? Why don't you just plug in hose into the new one?
I'm not
because the compression fitting's already been compressed.
Yeah, the compression fitting was deformed, so I wasn't going to like make the brake leak from a different spot.
Oh, no, it's fine.
It's not fine. So, and look, I did one of these. I don't remember if it was on the same. I think it was on the same type of bike. I don't remember. I did one of these the week before.
A mountain bike.
Okay, and it was like a 20-minute job. Between like putting the bike in the stand and rolling it out, like cutting the old caliper off, installing the new one, bleeding the brake. And,
yeah. So I'm like, hey, you can do this. And then I ended up in the courtyard and then in the other building. And then I was talking to someone else in the courtyard and I come in and now there's two people working on this Vado. And I was like, huh. And I go back out in the courtyard. I'm like, a third ain't gonna help.
And yeah. So, that brake hose was somewhere in the down tube, was just like being held in place by the battery that is also held in place by like the motor. And if you want to remove the battery, you have to remove the motor first. And luckily, just loosening the two bolts on the down tube of the bike that kind of like keep the battery from basically rattling around in the down tube.
Was it a Vado SL?
I don't.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. I was like, what in the heck bike are you working on? That, like, that's not how Vados work at all. But
well,
Vado SL.
Is,
yes. Okay.
Yeah. So luckily by loosening those bolts as far as I dared to loosen them, with the fear of like some shit coming loose in the frame and I would need to reassemble, like take it apart and reassemble the shit in the frame. I loosened them and I tapped them several times with a hammer and was able to like pull on the brake line from the back and push on it from the front and get it to just barely nudge backwards enough for me to reinstall this caliper. So yeah, that was a thing. But how long have we been recording? Is it time? I've had a long day.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Time to do a listener question or two? Or
I didn't realize we had questions. Let's knock at least one of those out.
They're pretty easy. First, I want to give a shout out to Brian, who sent me this thing that I think he was, it looks like maybe he was a project manager on this whole thing. So there's an apartment complex in, or apartment building, I guess, in Charlotte, North Carolina, that's trying to be like a sustainable car-free, not that you can't have a car and live there, but they're trying to build an apartment building to where you can easily commute to places you need to go or have the resources you need close by or in the apartment building in order to not use a car to live if you don't want to, if you choose to do that. And it's called Link Apartment, and they have a little like bike shop, like a self-maintenance kind of area, and it sounds like they're going to also offer like mechanic services along with that certain days of the week. I kind of breezed over the article, but I was mainly looking at the pictures of this tool wall that they made for people to just go and use the tools, and it's beautiful. Like, it's basically like woodwork art that holds bike tools, and I think it's really, really pretty. But yeah, it's really pretty. If you go to Link Cycle Instagram, it's LinkCykel. You can see a picture of this, and it is very, very pretty. It's done with like a CNC wood, like I guess a CNC router. They cut the tool shapes out, but then put plugs with a darker shade of wood in those little spots of the wall, so you would have like a silhouette of the tool that hangs there. And it's just a really pretty piece of like functional artwork. So
I'm sure it's pretty, but my peeve is people that draw outlines of tools on pegboard. I want to fight them.
You know, it's useful if you're a new mechanic working in a shop, so you can get tools back to where you found them. But those never look good.
They look friggin' terrible. I know what you're saying. I think that's probably
going to
look neat.
Yeah, like this looks nice.
But then what happens when you get a different set of needle nose pliers and they're like a little bit longer or shorter or different shape, and then your shit looks all fucked up?
Well, then your shit's just going to look fucked up. But this is very well done. I mean, it's cut by a computer. It's not drawn by a Sharpie, like someone drawing on a fucking wall of pegboard.
I do envision what you're saying, and I'm sure that's cool, but I'm just saying in general, when I see electrical tape outlines on pegboards, it makes me really angry.
Yeah, I can understand. Let's see, what else do we have? Oh, someone sent us this. This is from Harry Colon. And Harry says, what are your thoughts on this Kickstarter wireless shifting? And I've already forgot the name of the company, so I've got to go back to the YouTube video. Okay, first off, the name of the company is OG Bike Works, and they have made what they say the world's first configurable wireless shifter. I guess that the person who owns this place was born after Archer Components went out of business.
In September.
It's basically another Archer Components shifter. Like, you hook this to your, you know, a wire comes out of your rear derailleur and goes to this box, which goes to their programmable shifter. You use an app on your phone to tell it how to shift when you push a button, and it pulls the wire. Like, it's a little servo motor that pulls the wire when you tell it to shift. So it makes any wired derailleur into a wireless shifter. That has been done. 100% has been done. That company is no longer in business. And the name of this system is NXS. So it's like
the old boy band?
Yeah, it could be the old boy band. It could also, I guess, be confused for like SRAM NX or SRAM AXS. I don't know. I think that was...
Yeah, who's stealing SRAM NX? Let's be real here.
I know. Like, why... I don't know. Why would you call it that when...
Would SRAM enforce that? If someone just made an NX group set, and they're like, would SRAM be like, really? You want to use that?
Like, are they telling you you need to convert your NX into AXS? Is that what they're trying to covertly tell you here? I don't know. I think that it's like the first, like when I click on the video and it plays for 1 second, there's something at the bottom that says meet the world's first configurable wireless shifter. And right when I read that, I just want to turn the video off and not watch the rest of it, because it's absolutely not the world's first one of these. And I don't care if it works better. I don't care if there's little details about it, like tiny, minute details that are a little bit different. It's the same fucking thing as what has already been done. And that just really, like, that pokes my, I don't know, annoyance a lot.
My question would be, why? Is there some niche
people
application,
just like fucking with stuff?
Like some weird ultra, I don't even know what it would be, some trike or some tandem? Why do it? Why not just get a proper off-the-shelf shifter that already fucking works?
So if you're talking about when wireless shifting first came out and was really fucking expensive, then okay, it might make a little bit of sense, especially if you're dealing with a customer that maybe has some like mobility issues and needs a button to push instead of a lever, or needs a button in a different place than where you would normally have a lever or button
for. I don't know. I knew a guy that shifted his DI2 with his, what was left of his leg on a hand cycle, using a climbing shifter. So I don't know. I think there's ways to get shit done.
But DI2 was probably, I mean, look, so if you have a person who might be like mobility impaired and also didn't have the finances to get electronic shifting several years ago, okay, something like this could make a lot of sense if you need to help that person out. But electronic shifting is much more affordable now.
Yeah, we have GX level shifting with all kinds of different shifter options and stuff. And I guess if someone could come up with the actual fringe case where it makes sense, I guess so. But like, why even make this? What mass market would buy this thing? I just don't
like that's
get it.
So that's the only system. I don't know. Or maybe you want fewer wires on your Shimano mountain bike drivetrain. So you could put this on like your, you know, non-DI2 Shimano mountain bike drivetrain and have wireless shifting.
I just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Do we have a question that's actually cool? I mean, Harry Colin, I appreciate the thing to talk about. I'm just not in the mood to talk about Archer 2.0 when you can get fucking GX Axis and just go party. Like their thing on Kickstarter is like, this box 9-speed cassette's working with a 12, or 9-speed derailleur's working with a 12-speed cassette. And I'm like, cool, you're riding fucking box components. Like, I don't think that I'm the target demographic for this. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. We have one from Sean, and Kenny, you're not allowed to talk here. Sean says, hey, all, not a bearing question this time. Oh, sorry, no, that he asked a bearing question last time. So when you contacted us multiple forms on our JRA website, first off, thank you. We like repeat customers. I also, when the email comes through, all of your previous questions are like in the email thread. So I had accidentally scrolled to where he asked a question about bearings, ceramic bearings. And I was going to say, Kenny, you can't talk. I'm just going to read this and then answer it. Because we didn't need another rant tonight.
Sure,
so
sure.
Sean says, hey, all, not a bearing question this time. I will be in Millington, Tennessee for about 2 weeks in May and was wondering where you would recommend riding if I get the chance. Looking at Trail Forks, Nesbitt Park, a.k.a. Stanky Creek, looks like a fairly decent option that is somewhat near where I will be, but wondering if you had any other recommendations. Thanks.
Well, there's not shit in Millington.
Yeah, Stanky Creek is good. Actually, in Millington, you can go out to Shelby Forest, which is not like single track trails, but it is a really pretty area to ride. So yeah, like exploring around Shelby Forest is a lot of fun. Like if you have a day or half a day to do that, take your bug repellent because the mosquitoes out there are fucking terrible. And the horse flies. Yeah, there are mosquitoes and horse flies everywhere in the South, but you're real close to the Mississippi River there, and there's a lot of like swampy area.
You'll have a swampy ass too.
You will have a swampy ass. But yeah, I would say Stanky Creek is a good one. But yeah, if you just want to go explore, you know, quiet kind of back roads, a little bit of gravel, Shelby Forest is a great place to go and do that.
I'm going to back up here for a minute. I'm looking at this shifter thingy.
Oh, God.
My question is a Kickstarter question. Don't they have to tell you how much fucking money this thing is going to be, like, when it comes out, or how much you... Aren't you supposed to, like, pledge money to this thing and, like, get
No, the Kickstarter's not open yet.
Oh, okay.
It's not launched yet. So the launch date is when you can start giving them money.
Gotcha. Anyway, that's it.
This is one that I would like to see an article on Pink Bike, and I want to see the comments on it.
Again, I'm sure there's already been a programmable one where if you, yeah, the whole point is, I guess you have, you want to run some weird derailleur on some weird cassette, and the spacing, no shifter would allow you to do that. So you could like program in your shift distances, essentially. So maybe there is some semi-neat niche thing you could do with it.
I guess.
But
that doesn't mean it's that the derailleur is going to like shifting on that cassette, but if it's not made to shift that large of a cassette.
Yeah, exactly, right? There's no telling. And they make so many different cassettes now that they didn't used to make in all kinds of different configs.
It's like, oh, I didn't want to run SRAM, so I've got this whatever 10-speed cassette with a 54-tooth Joe's CNC shop chain, low gear behind it, and a goat link attached to another goat link, and now I want to use this to shift it.
I guess you could use it for like a
you
custom.
You mean an Aerozyne cassette?
Yeah.
I'm thinking you run an actual moto chain, like a 520 moto chain, and you have three gears on the back of an e-bike.
There you go.
And it's just like ka-chunk, ka-chunk, and it moves it over like 1 inch at a time. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
The 1154 cassette exists. Surprisingly, it has less range than an Eagle cassette and costs just the same amount of money.
The stuff people do, I guess I don't understand why you would do kook stuff these days, because you can just do it right for a reasonable amount of money. The reason you had to do kook stuff in like 2005 is because nobody made any of that stuff. But now people make the proper stuff. Why do it?
Yeah, exactly. People haven't caught on to like, you can actually do that. It's like the people that still run mechanical brakes because disc brakes or hydraulic brakes are not reliable, or they want to do touring and, you know, you can always get a cable at a bike shop. Well, you can always get fucking .5.1 or .4
or just buy
at a fucking AutoZone or at Joe's garage.
Yeah.
Just in the middle of bumfuck nowhere.
Just put an MT-201 Shimano brake, a complete, in your bag. It's $20.
Yeah, there you go.
Boom. Done.
All right. Are we ready to read patrons and shut it down?
Yes,
yeah,
we
I
are.
I think I just hacked up part of my lung.
Shout out to newest patron, Jeff, who is an $8 a month patron.
The only one.
The only one. Jeff just wanted to be different. And, I'm assuming he did 8 instead of 10 because, you know, maybe he didn't want us to read his name on air, but Jeff, you're getting it read anyway. So thank you, Jeff. I think we'll change this to anyone that gives us $8 a month or more is going to be read on Patreon. So, at $8
a
month.
Smart business decision, because now next week, Jeff's going to give us $7.
No, we're done. Just read them off.
All right. At $10 a month, we've got Zozo. Wendy's nuggets taste like they came out of her ass. Tom P. bleaches his stink wrinkle. Tom's P. Timothy. Ty Lover. Ty. Tennessee Zach. Taylor Zwift. Taper Bore Pro. Still fuck with them basic hoes. In fact, in with one right now. Skunk in your trap. Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dell, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Matt's Formerly Pretty Hands, RIP, Leland, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Fuck Bike Rumors, Shitty Website, Freel Lippin, Frank the Tank, Eric, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Anus Balls, AJ, Aaron, _, Single, at $11.11 per month, Single Speed Racing, where average becomes a lifestyle choice. We've got Patamillan Disco at $14 Australian, Dean at $16.50 Australian. At $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, My Neck, My Back, Lick My Pussy, and My Crack, Joe, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors. We kudos our own rides at 50.
Shut her down.
Shut her down before Matt has another coughing attack.
Yeah, I'm going to bed.
Take some scissorp, get to sleep.
Something like that. Hibernol.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.